been asked to tell the truth again for 2 weeks in a row. My name is Kessling. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks for having me back. And I will be here next week as well. So I will recap a little bit about what I shared last week for anyone who wasn't here, of course. And of course, like our book talks about, little or nothing can be accomplished until, like, basically we secure the confidence of another alcoholic as qualifying as an alcoholic. So I can do that briefly as well, but I do like to, I'm really bad about sharing when I got sober. So I do have a home group. Oh my God, I love you. Thank you for coming. So I do have a home group, which is Big Book Magic in Manhattan. Meet on Thursdays at 7:45 p.m. We are also a meeting that's based in the literature, and the thing that I really love about that meeting is that it's people sharing their experience with the literature. It's less so like, hey, we're going to highlight this or do this, so when we invite a speaker to come, they're literally sharing what their experience was like going through the steps or how they relate to that section of the Big Book, and I really love that format. It was the only meeting that I went to when I first got sober that I didn't want to kill myself in, right? Because I couldn't argue with someone's experience, and I came in with a lot of false pride, and I was very unteachable, and all of that. Had my last drink on the morning of October 20th, 2015. So there are a lot of people here who are sober quite a bit longer, I'm sure. And of course, some folks where I'm just a little bit further along as well. And there's no second-class membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all here as peers. Like I said, some of us are just a little bit further along in this process and in sobriety time. What I can say is it has really helped to have some time away from that last drink. Like, my brain and body and, you know, spirit and psyche and all that have healed a great deal. And my first year was tremendously difficult. And far more difficult than other times that I've been sober previously, which I shared a little bit about last time in speaking about this theme. So cornerstone, keystone, and foundation stone. And the cornerstone being related to step two, which is came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And kind of the message that I had there was I didn't really come to believe until I had an experience with it, right? And going through what I hope to be sharing a little bit more about tonight, steps 3 through 9, is I start to see that cornerstone, like, firmly put in place once I have an experience with steps 3 through 9, right? That culmination, right, as I arrive at a place where I've come to believe that there's some sort of solution, or I have an experience, right? The 9th step promises talk about being amazed before we're halfway through. What are we amazed by? Right, what we're experiencing in this immense process. And God doing for me what I could not do for myself is basically the amends. This is not something that I would go out and do on my own at all. So to quickly qualify as an alcoholic, my problem is I drink when I want to, but also I drink when I don't want to. So pretty much I'm just drinking, right? And I'm not able to stay stopped. And once I pick up, I'm screwed. So it's just that vicious cycle where I pretty much drink no matter what at some place in time, right? For me, there's no such thing as a trigger because the trigger is just my mind, right? I don't need a good reason to drink, though sometimes I have what appears to be a good reason to drink. It could be a lot of things. So where is this reference that I'm talking about as far as sort of the theme for this evening of a keystone? And we find it on page 62. I'm not going to read a ton out of the Big Book, but just for anybody who likes to know where these things are, because as tempting as it is to just make up page numbers and have no one check me, unfortunately you all have books in front of yourselves. Like, it's on 152, right? But what it tells us, right, we're actually... This section of from the, I think it's the bottom of 60 to through 63 is really talking about this third step, right? This is the information that's really being shared on it and the direction on it as well. And we have this actor scenario, right, where I'm the actor trying to play the director, when really I'm just one among many. I'm one small part of a great whole, and here I'm trying to manage my life. I'm trying to manage other people, right? If they would just do as I wish they would do, like, I would be okay, or things would be okay. I'd get the better outcome. But leading into step three, it says, you know, being convinced, right? And what are we convinced of, right? Are these three pertinent ideas that, A, we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, B, that probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism, and those first two pertinent ideas are step one, and then start talking about step two, that God could and would if he were sought, right? And when I first came in, I did not believe that God could and would if he were sought, but that transfer of faith began to occur when I saw other people in whom the problem had been solved, right? And so, like, in the format of this meeting, in the introduction, I think it said, like, you know, we invite, like, recovered alcoholics to come on through, and I just want to qualify what that means to me as far as being recovered, because we hear this one day at a time thing in 24 hours, and of course we know people who slip, right? And it simply means that I do not have the symptoms anymore. And what are these symptoms that I'm talking about? I'm not drunk right now, you know, seeking with a fervent passion that next drink, right? Because I'm bodily and mentally different from the next person, where I'm just not somebody who's able to drink safely. Once I have one, I'm off. I'm off to the races, and I have little or no control over, like, the amount I drink or sort of what happens next. That's my experience with drinking, right? So that's one symptom that I don't have today because I've been separated from alcohol for 7 years. The other symptom is this desire to drink has left me. And this is something we read about in the 10-step promises, just to kind of recap it. A, I'm placed in a position of neutrality when it comes to alcohol. I talked a little bit about that last week, where there's alcohol in my fridge. I don't notice most of the time, right? There are places I need to go and things I need to do where I might be around alcohol, right? I live in New York City. There are bars, there are liquor stores. All of those things are around me. And the miracle of it is I don't even really think about it that often. Sometimes I notice it. So I don't have that, you know, it's one of the, I'm going to say cornerstones, it's one of the, you know, cornerstones or like real earmarks of alcoholism is that I'm somebody where that obsession returns at some point. Or it's even persistent. I've had that experience of being an obsession of wanting to get drunk and loaded, where it just doesn't seem to go away, and I don't seem to quite get that relief. And a lot of my first weeks, months in that first year, and even times after that, extremely difficult in that way. And kind of the message I have is, like, it does work if we continue to do those things. At least it did for me. And my feet had to continue to move, right? So if I'm convinced of those three pertinent ideas, right, that I'm alcoholic, can't manage my own life, there's an aspect of step one. Step B, that probably no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. Really, I'm screwed when it comes to this obsession, you know, through my own resources, through my own willpower, through my own best thinking, trying to, you know, stay sober based on fear of consequences, based on my own self-knowledge. I'm not able to do that. And in fact, there may not be anything else that's able to do that. And then see that God couldn't would if he were sought, right? So I have that lack of power, right? The dilemma is lack of power. So where are we going to find this power? Kind of being directed toward this, hey, you got to find something bigger than yourself. And I'm someone who came in who did not have that. I did not have a belief. I did not have spiritual concepts and terms which worked for me in any manner, nor was I super open to it, talking about that cornerstone. So then we have this actor scenario, and this all sounds, right, so we talk about step three, I just want to say what it is, right? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, right? And this seems like an impossible task as someone who came in as an atheist and then perhaps more agnostic leaning, right? How do I do that? So the section on 62 where they actually mention the Keystone, they're trying to give specific direction on it. I think it's toward the bottom of the page. I'm just looking at it on my phone where I wrote it down. This is the how and why of it. Okay. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. We decided hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So there are actually quite a few things going on here. So this is the how and why of it. At least for me, what I'm being instructed is like this is how to live step three, right? Okay, we have this prayer here on the next page, which is like, okay, great, we say this prayer when we're ready, the wording is optional, all of those things. And then I've taken step three and then I move on to four, right? Launch into action sort of deal. But here it's like this is what I'm trying to do, hopefully, on a continuous basis. So I think this applies to more than a few steps. Like we think about step 6 and 7, like we have this prayer, it then says we've completed step 7, and it's kind of like, great, that's it, right? You know, after having done an inventory, sure, there are a lot of things that I've discovered about myself and my behavior and how I respond and interact with others that perhaps I really don't like. And sure, I'm willing to, you know, ask something to remove that. That sounds absolutely great. But what does it look like moving forward? And I really view the third step the same way in this example, right? And if I'm really convinced of that first pertinent idea that I'm an alcoholic and can't manage my own life, then I need some help with management. It's being implied there. I need some help when it comes to managing my life. Or perhaps I risk drinking again to some degree. There may be, you know, and Silkworth talks about this in The Doctor's Opinion. I think Bill mentions it at least in one or two places in our basic text, where like there is that alcoholic, right, that may be totally sane when it comes to all other things except when it comes to alcohol. Some people would argue this, that's fine. I've met a few of these people. I swear to God, I've met a few of these people where this was their one problem, and the insanity strictly was they were turned to alcohol despite that sincere desire to stay stopped, despite their better judgment, despite looking at their history and going, this is a problem, right? I'm not one of them. I just need to know that for me. I need a lot more help with management as far as my life. Our 11th step says later on that, like, hey, as alcoholics, like, a lot of us tend to be undisciplined, so, you know, we're asking God to help us discipline us in this way, through this practice, through this discipline, through this routine that's suggested that we incorporate as a part of this 11th step, right? So this is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. I need to have some clarity on what that looks like. And it, what I can say is that it's become easier the longer I'm sober, the busier I've gotten in this, and practicing, you know, these tools that were given, self-examination, or you can call it self-appraisal, right? Speaking with others about it, and utilizing prayer and meditation, right? I've gained better clarity on when I am trying to impose myself on a situation or on somebody else. We call it self-will as well, for short. Or is this something where I'm being guided that's coming from a better place, right? If I break out some yardsticks about, I'm not going to talk about the four absolutes, but I think you all know where I'm going with that. So I got to stop doing that. I got to quit playing God in my life and the lives of others, right? Being the actor who's trying to play the director just simply doesn't work. And I like when I came in, I spent a lot of time with a polymer chemist who was he's certainly passed away now. but very smart man, and I respected him because he was a man of science and he was academic and it was all these things, and he wasn't my sponsor, but he spent a lot of time with me as somebody who came in really rebelling against this idea of spirituality and some sort of God of my understanding. And one of the things he would say is, you know, good luck trying to improve the mind with the mind you have, which logically kind of makes some sense, right? When people would say, your best thinking got you here. And I can see myself arguing that, where I'm like, no, that's some of my bad thinking. My best thinking is actually pretty good. But the same principle applies, where it's like, you know, I'm the problem, right? If I take a look at my relationships or in the past or where things have fallen apart, the common denominator is really often me. Not that other people perhaps don't play some sort of role or have some contribution in these other areas. But a lot of the time I place myself in some sort of position where, yeah, you know, I'm vulnerable to getting hurt in this situation. Had a sponsee the last couple of weeks who's encountering what it's like to date in a small circle of people. Okay? And I think a lot of, and this isn't within Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think this certainly applies to Alcoholics Anonymous, like doing this in your home group and things like that. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong here, right? I feel really justified in some of the contempt that I'm experiencing. And simply what I pointed out was like, hey, you're placing yourself in this position where you are dating within a small circle of people, and they're going to talk, and they may be hurt, and they may retaliate in ways because they are hurt. So I like this idea of self-imposed crisis. So if I'm going to quit playing God, right, what am I doing then? It says, next hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. And then it goes on to just reinforce that. He is the principal, we are his agents, he is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. All that's saying to me is I'm really just trying to use what I'm taught here so that less and less of the time, or at least with a reduced frequency and intensity, I'm living by self well. And instead, I'm here talking to others, doing self-examination, using prayer and meditation, pausing before I respond to something. Because I got to tell you, I love what the 12 and 12 says about, you know, nothing is really going to reward us so much as restraint of tongue and pen. Because I got to say, I've had those situations where I've reacted to something or I responded to something without pausing or taking that time or revisiting it later. And yeah, I've gone and made amends afterward, sure. But those relationships have never been the same as the result of what I've said. And that's just real. That's just been life for me. So I'm trying to seek God's will for me. We're also informed later on, again, kind of revisiting this 11th step, which for me is very tied into this third step, that I'm not always going to be inspired. I'm not always going to know the right course of action. I'm not always going to know what God's will is for me. In fact, like, I may really get hurt by any assumptions that I make about this. And for a long time, I didn't understand, I think it's on 88, where it's talking about, like, hey, you know, if we're doing this successfully, then I'm going to be in less fear and less self-pity and less danger of excitement. So for a long time, I was like, what's wrong with the excitement piece, right? And the way that I view it today is it just simply means is like, I'm going overboard or getting really excited about something which may not be what I'm supposed to be doing. It just simply may not be what I'm supposed to be doing. And I've seen that happen with a lot of people, and I've seen that happen in my life too. And some of those times, I've come to reflect on it later and learn, like, oh boy, that's not, you know, that was my will. That wasn't really what, you know, was indicated that I should be doing at all. And a lot of the times when I'm taking these indicated actions, okay, this is where I'm being guided to. I'm using the principles of these steps. I'm talking to a sponsor. I'm utilizing that self-appraisal and that prayer and meditation. And a lot of times I'll get guided to this thing and I'll feel really uncertain about it. And then later on I go, oh, that was exactly what was supposed to happen. Like, I know that I was following God's will. It was present at that time. Right? So sometimes the things that I feel sure about, I'm derailed. And the things that I feel a little bit less certain about, if I'm backing that up with what I've been taught to do here, I may feel uncertain about it, but it might absolutely be the right thing to do. Now, knowing what's what, that's hard. That's hard. But I do become encouraged, right? I have not experienced the... I continue to get sicker in the rooms. I'm always sick. I will always be sick sort of mentality, right? What I'm told is like, hey, the more I do this, actually, the more I'm going to be on that plane of inspiration. So, like, I certainly do believe that we not only recover from alcoholism, but like our thinking can straighten out quite a bit as well. And that's been good news to me. I felt better about that. My brain fires on more cylinders today, and I tend to react poorly less often. Sometimes it happens. I'm one of those people where I'm really good at compartmentalizing things and can easily not bring God into this area or that area at different times, right? And that's a real disservice to me and to others, of course, if anyone is negatively affected by that. So this is a really simple idea for me. It's like, hey, try to do what feels right rather than what feels good. Because I, as an alcoholic, I've always been seeking, do what feels good, right? I had a lot of faith in the bottle, in that if I took a drink, a change is going to happen. I'm going to experience something. And it's not something where I'm going to pray and meditate and go to meetings and write things and talk to other people and then a few months down the line have an experience. I'm going to get a pretty immediate experience. But it's not microwave recovery. Right? So I have a real inclination to go toward that easier, softer way, which for me has been alcohol, because this path that we have laid out here is simple, but it's not easy. But boy, is it worth it, is kind of what I qualify that statement with. And it really is worth it. So it's simple. And it says, this concept, this simple idea that I'm attempting to share kind of what it means to me, was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So now, like, we're kind of getting a little bit more clarity at this point in the book about what is the spiritual structure that we're building, or hope to be building. We talk about cement, right? The cement which binds us. One of those things is identification, but it's not just that. It's also that we have like a way of life that we're kind of, you know, just muddling along together with, you know, with hopefully a lot of joy, and of course, like, there's going to be some pain as well, right? And pain being the touchstone of growth. Again, 12 and 12. I love the 12 and 12. The longer I've been sober, I think it's so great. So we're building an arch, I guess we're being told here. You may think that's really silly. That's fine. I don't know if it's silly or not silly. It's just kind of what we're given. And you could use whatever metaphor works for you. We're also given a metaphor later on, I think when we're talking about three legacies, like Cathedral of the Spirit, right? We're told before we arrive at this place in the book, that where are we to find this power greater than ourselves? Well, it says deep down within us, right? So maybe this is, maybe you visualize this arch as an outside thing or an inside thing, or this cathedral, the spirit that we're building around us so that we can access and tap into this power. Like, it doesn't really matter. So if we have an arch, we got the cornerstones on each side at the bottom, and then the keystone is what connects them. That's my understanding. May I be corrected on that someday, but I feel pretty confident that's what I've been told. Again, not a Mason. I said that last week. I don't know construction. Please don't ask me to build anything that is not outlined in our book. So this is really important. It's saying this is the thing that keeps that arch from collapsing. Now, when we pass through that arch to become a free person, it's perhaps up for debate. I tend to think that I've been restored to sanity kind of by the point we arrive at that 10th step, right? Being placed in a position of neutrality when it comes to alcohol, right? I'm beginning to sense that I'm connected to something. I've begun to have some sort of real experience. Maybe I didn't have that in step 5, right? But maybe I'm experiencing a few of these 9th step promises, you know, making some real progress in going out and making amends to people where I begin to have some sort of experience here. So that's kind of my best guess on it, right? And for some people, it may not be that at all. I don't know. It may be a few years down the line, you get out of self and you have an experience helping another alcoholic in a way that you've never had before, where you go, oh my God, it's like, I feel really free here. I'm recognizing that. So again, you can't have my experience. You know, everyone here is supposed to have their own experience with this thing, with step 2, with a step 3, with any and all these steps. So kind of continuing on, since the theme is sort of this spiritual structure that we're talking about, we hear about what the foundation is. This would be 75. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, step 5, admitted to ourselves, to God, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Taking this book down from our shelf, turn back to the page, contains the 12 steps, and then here we go. Containing the first 5 proposals, which is just steps 1 through 5. We ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we will walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement, put it into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So that's probably one of the biggest places in the book that contains this metaphor. But setting aside the metaphor, what is the message here? Right? Very, very simply, the message here is, make sure I've really done these things, that my work is solid here. I've never written a perfect inventory in that 4th step. I've written, you know, subsequent inventories and use different formats, and of course some straight out of the book, and some people will disagree about that. And again, not here to be a big book technician. I just hope you have the experience you're supposed to have when you write an inventory. The best inventory I ever wrote was less so out of the book, but it was the most powerful experience I had. It was the first one, and I withheld absolutely nothing, and I shared it with somebody else too, right? Since then, I've gained better clarity on that inventory, what my undesirable character traits are and how they've affected others, how they've hurt others, and also informed me on how, like, I don't want to behave in the future, which is really one of those important things, and can fall short of. So these first 5 steps are really important as a foundation, and I may have mentioned, you know, I've taken people through the steps where we do it in a really short period of time, and I've seen that work, and people stay sober, long-term sobriety. And I've also seen people go through this work, you know, going line by line in our book, and having very, very different experiences with it. And I hope that you have the right sponsor at the right time for what you need at that point, and I've had that, right? When I first really, really got into AA, I had that, no BS, you're going to do X, Y, and Z, you're going to call me every day, you're going to go to a meeting every day, you're going to call, you're going to do all of those things. This time around, I didn't have that, right? God put 2 people in a room, and it was exactly the right thing. My sponsor and myself, and it was exactly what I needed at that time. But today, at least for now, and this may look different in 6 months, it may look different in 6 years, you know, I look at how much of our book focuses on this first step. We have, like, the doctor's opinion, and then we have Bill's story, which is to me just an example of the problem and the solution. First 8 pages we have is, what was he like? What was the progression of his alcoholism? What did that look like? We have so much identification in here on that. I still continue to need to hear that in order to know that, yeah, you're my variety, you know, and you've had this, and you, I still need that today to really connect with people, not just on the solution, but I need to connect on the problem today. Maybe part of that's my fault, but I love that. I go, yeah, they're a real drunk, right? And they have something that they want, right? Again, instead of talking about, like, they have something that I want. I'm attracted to those people who really like what they have. We have Bill's story, example of the problem, and an example of the solution of what happened, and then kind of what he became, right? This fourth dimension catapulted, right? All these really, like, flowery, you know, sort of ridiculous testaments to what his experience was like, but really beautiful and true simultaneously. And then we have chapter 2, which is There is a Solution. Again, talking a lot about my problem, talking a lot about my alcoholism, what it looks like. And then we go to more about alcoholism that speaks further to my thinking and some of these, you know, real earmarks of an alcoholic look like too. We have 4 full chapters right there. And this is not including all the other first step references throughout the book. There are many. There are many. One of my favorite passages to read with someone who's new in trying to help them figure out for themselves whether they're alcoholic or not is that first page of A Vision for You, talking about the 4 terrible horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Right? Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And I understand when I read that page today. I relate to those paragraphs today, sometimes just in my own sobriety, when I get away from this simple idea, this keystone that we're talking about when it comes to, you know, am I living by my will or God's will? And do I even know the difference here? Because I can get far away. I can have others telling me one thing and I'm going, no, no, no. And maybe some of those times I'm right, you know, my amends are my amends. How I live my life is how I live my life, and I have a connection with God, which is independent from other people. As a sponsor, I do not play God, I do not play doctor. And I have a tendency more today to say, I don't know, why don't you pray about it? Why don't you take some quiet time around it? Why don't you talk to so-and-so who has a more similar experience with this, because I don't. But this first step is talked about so much, right? I know I'm bouncing around in different chapters and things like that, and 12 and 12 tells me it's the only step I need to take at that 100% level. So I spend some real time with people on this, because I'm told specifically that there's got to be no reservation here. There's got to be no lurking notion that one day I'm going to be able to drink like other people and control and enjoy it. At the same time, both control and enjoy. I'm not saying control it because you may not enjoy it, or enjoy it because then you're likely not to control. So I think it's very, very good they said the and is in there. Right? For me, I've experienced neither in a very, very long time. I've neither controlled or enjoyed, and certainly not both. In a very, very long time. And that's part of the progression for me. So I spend time with people on this. I really, really spend time with people on it. And some people may say I go too slowly and things like that. And again, I just hope that people have the experience that they're supposed to have with it. Some people becomes clearer. I'm like, yeah, maybe we don't have to go through line by line what you're sharing with me and what I've shared with you, and you understand this deal. Maybe we get into some action more quickly and talk about perhaps where we've fallen short in the past if you're someone who's had an experience with this and then had a slip again or struggling to get it. Because just because I have a good foundation in the first step does not mean I stay sober. Right? If anything, if I really had that experience, it goes, wow, I've convinced myself that I'm hopeless, and what's the point? Why not keep on drinking? You know, so when I speak, especially at hospitals and institutions, I hope I carry a message of hopelessness as well for that, you know, chronic variety alcoholic where there's virtually no other solution. And of course, that message of hope is there as well because, you know, I'm a living example that this program works for a chronic alcoholic like me who is completely unable to stay stopped by every method that I try. 25, 30 different programs, psych wards, medication, lots and lots of stuff, right? And had a real desire to stay stopped and was just very simply unable to. And then we have steps two. Talked a lot about that last week. I, you know, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Three, what we're kind of talking about right now, made this decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God, right? And breaking it down real simply, I can do it a few ways. I can... That very first time where I took that third step and I did that prayer, not believing anything, not believing that there was a God, feeling very silly doing this, I had a sponsor. He didn't do this with me. He didn't sponsor me for very long. I moved and he was out of the country and stuff. But one of the ways that he used to take people through the third step was he'd take them to the mall and have them get down on their knees and take the third step prayer, like right by the fountain. And like, it seems very like ridiculous and embarrassing. And he said, he's like, I know if they're willing to do that, that they're going to be willing to go through with the rest of the work. This is not sanctioned AA, how to take the third step. I don't want to scare anybody. But I love that because to him it was a demonstration of willingness. And the hope is that I have that willingness to go to any lengths to solve this problem. And not everybody has that. And I really didn't have that this time either, right? It's not to say that I was automatically doomed just because I came in and I'm like, I don't know if I want to be sober this time. I just don't know how to die. Stayed sober by a lot of grace, as I tend to say. But my feet didn't move. Right? For a while they did move. So very simply, my decision then, this was back in 2009, my decision then was just go through the rest of the steps. That's all my sponsor said. He's like, I'm just going to make this really, really simple for you because you have a lot of trouble with this. And you don't get that you may have an experience in the other side of this. You're not intended to believe or have come to believe at this point. And that's all I did. And then he pointed at kind of like the next page and he says, next we launch into action because this decision is going to have little permanent effect unless it's at once followed by a strenuous effort to deface and be rid of the things that have been blocking me. So this idea of being blocked off also is presented to us. And I really like when I hear folks say, and there are many ways to say it, but all these steps are doing it. The steps aren't the thing that keep me sober. It's not my sponsor that keeps me sober. For me, as being beyond human aid from being able to stay sober for permanent recovery, all I'm doing through these steps is just clearing a channel for me to connect with something. And there's some sort of transfer of power that occurs. I'm not going to say that I'm the one who's given the power, it's just God has the power. I don't think the semantics matter so much. For me, I believe I'm just as powerless over alcohol today as I was the day that I came back in. And what I'm given, this position of neutrality, just doesn't come from me. That power just simply doesn't come from me. If you view it the other way around, I don't think it matters. I don't know the right answer on that. And I don't think it matters if there is a right answer on it, perhaps, as long as it works. So I'm just clearing a channel and saying, okay, now we've made this decision, I've come to believe maybe something's gonna work here, and time to get into doing some work. Even though chapter 4 isn't how it works, and then then step 5 begins and into action, I kind of view like taking pen to paper, like now we're doing stuff as well. And so I did this inventory. And I just followed the format, and I was just honest. That's one of the prerequisites that's I'm told in the beginning of how it works. Is like I gotta be honest about all this stuff. And for me, I've had to be entirely honest with somebody else, at a minimum with my sponsor, right? And one of the great things about going through this immense process and using my sponsor in it is that he's already heard my inventory, and he has a pretty good idea of what's gonna. Of kind of what questions I might have, or perhaps where I'm misguided on some things, and I can get a bit of guidance. That first time I went through the steps and had the sponsor who was 13 months sober, so he's probably like closer to a year and a half by the time I'm in this process. He kind of just said, they're your amends, go out and make them. And I've seen that work really well. Like today, if you told me, okay, you know, if I do an inventory once a year, once every few years or something like that, and I share it with someone, they'd be like, well, you know what you need to do. And to some degree, that's really correct, because I've made a number of events. I have some experience with this. I'm more connected than I used to be. And I have an idea of what that looks like and how to carry out those actions. But back then, I didn't really, you know, I don't recommend like doing events through like Facebook messages. Maybe it's a good way to contact someone to say like, hey, like, you know, could we? Are you open to having a conversation about some things I did in the past? I have some sort of idea. Also, of course, I think it's very human. I'm on that fourth step, or that third step, or that fifth step, and I'm thinking about that ninth step, going out and making direct amends to people. That's not the step I'm on, right? So, and I get that a lot, and I have this sponsee, and finally he's going out and making amends, and he's already made one big one, and like, you know, and the time leading up to that, he, you know, we're doing the inventory, and he's like, oh God, I owe a lot of money. I'm like, yes you do, but we're not talking about that right now. So I did this inventory, and I shared this thing, and as I said, like, I right before the meeting, someone called me. I don't sponsor them or anything like that, but he's like, I'm so glad you picked up. I haven't been able to reach my sponsor in 3 days. And he shared something where he's like, I just got to get it off my chest. And that's one of the ways that I continue to stay here, is I continue to disclose myself and my deficiencies and where I fall short. And for me, there are a handful of people where I have that spiritual consent with, where I can share anything. I don't do that at meetings. I don't dump on people at meetings. I'm not saying I've never done that. I absolutely have. I have a better idea of what's appropriate for me to share here, and do lose some freedom coming up to speak or at a microphone, of course. But I have those people, right, who I can share those things with, where it's like, I did a really, you know, I messed up bad this week. And it's not just in my actions. What time is supposed to stop? 7:25?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I know I gotta leave. Okay. Well, we're making it to what step? Whoops. Anywho, what was the last thing I just said?
You really messed up this week.
Yeah.
No, not this week. This week's been good. Right. Thank you. So I've had to have that. I've had to continue to have that honesty. Boy, there's so much to say more about 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. And I really want to lend the time next week to talking about, because we're talking about Foundation Stone. And Foundation Stone is basically the 12th step in helping others. But I think it's also important to talk about the other parts of the 12th step, if you kind of break it down into three parts, the spiritual awakening part, what the heck does that mean? And the other parts, and then carrying the other part, and then carrying the message, of course, practicing the principles, and then carrying the message. The next time I think I really, really had an experience with the third step, that first time was just making a decision, right? This being that keystone. The second time I had that, what I've already shared, where I had a sponsor who heard my inventory and was like, oh boy. And doing that, do what feels right rather than what feels good. And I can't tell you, as simple as an idea as that is, how hard that has been for me, at least. Some days I do that really well. What the third step looks like for me today is very, very different. Not different from that last part. And it's a hard idea, right? And I kind of look at step 6 and 7, right, with these defects and having some willingness to have them removed and perhaps taking some action and talking to others and praying for help and actually trying to stop the crappy things and start doing some of the good things and living my assets rather than my liabilities. But the idea that I have for the third step today, which I'm in no way ever close to achieving on a consistent basis, is that my life is not about me anymore. So if my problem is selfishness and self-centeredness, the suggestion is that, like, hey, the solution is really not that I can't have a life, can't enjoy a life, not that I'm supposed to become some monk or give away all of my puny assets, right? That's not the point, right? But I'm carrying this spirit of my life is not about me, right? And this, my purpose now is to be of maximum service to God and to, basically his kids, right? So, and that's not just an Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I don't know what God's will is for you. You might be really busy doing other things and not going to a million meetings and speaking all over the country or doing, or whatever, and sponsoring 1,800 people. Your will might be to do something really important with your family or at your job and do some important research. I don't know. But that same spirit can carry over where it's like, my life's no longer about me. And I really struggle with that today, so a lot of the time. What that looks like when I get closer to hitting that ideal is I spend a lot less time thinking about what sort of relief I'm going to get that day, right? Where I'm like, when is my day over? So I can finally, like, have some peace from my phone ringing or this or that or this stress or thinking about this thing. I'm thinking about that a lot less. I'm thinking about me a lot less. In fact, I'm looking forward to perhaps some of these obligations. One of the things I do, since I've started this new job about 7 months ago, I've been really bad about getting up early to do this 11-step discipline. And I pray first thing in the morning, but before I do anything else. And then I tend to do like the routine of the readings and some quiet time on the subway. It's not ideal. I take some quiet time later at night and sometimes in the afternoons and pause throughout the day a bit. So it's not what I suggest. But in that, right, when I'm reading this and I'm actually trying to do the things that it asks, right, I'm asking God to divorce myself from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Which is great. For me, I say that, and then I flip it around, and I say, help me live in gratitude, honesty, and unselfishness. And then I actually try to think about some of the things that are coming up in that day where I'm just trying to reframe things to have some gratitude around it. So I have a hard job. Sometimes it's really difficult. I'm not always excited to go. And then those days where I'm really, really kind of taking this principle, my life is no longer about me, and I'm like, boy, do I have an opportunity to go here to do this today and then meet with a sponsee later, maybe in a meeting or whatever that looks like. So that's what my third step ideal looks like today. Sometimes I don't even bother to aim for it. I'll just be honest about that. Some days I just don't want it. Well, that's a terrible note to end on. I look forward to coming back and talking about one of the things that has been most beautiful for me, which is carrying this message that we've been given to other people. So thank you so much.